most of the time we're dealing with them where they come after us. And I can tell you from experience, the best fight to have is the one you picked.
Yes.
You go out and go against them. When you're the plaintiff, when you're the petitioner, everything changes.
Hey friends, Sean from SGT Report here. Thank you so much for tuning in. That was Randy Kelton. He and James Tracy joined me to discuss how to take the law into your own hands to take our country back. As we do a screen share here, guys, I want to remind you that the Demon Rats are pedophile lovers who run cover for Pedo Crimes and Pedo Joe. Josh Holly tweeted this, "I just went to the Senate floor to try to pass a bill toughening sentences on child pornographers, and the Democrats blocked it," again calling the child porn crisis a conspiracy theory. And that tells you everything you need to know about Pedo Joe, the Demon Rats, and the Biden crime family. And by the way, guys, we live in a banana republic. I'll keep saying it because the enemies of humanity have just indicted their political opponent, Donald J. Trump. And just one last note, to magnify the degree to which we've become a banana republic, this Bozo the Clown demon at the SEC, Gary Gensler, well, guess what? According to Coinbase, Gensler, who just targeted Binance and Coinbase and is coming hard in the paint after crypto and Bitcoin, well, he just placed $2.5 million in Bitcoin shorts just 48 hours ago before he targeted Coinbase. What a demon. Gary Gensler, Goldman Snake. Friends, it's time to take our country back, and you're going to learn how to do just that in this interview. Thanks so much for tuning in. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. Rein in wealth with a gold IRA from Noble Gold Investments. A gold IRA can fortify your own financial kingdom. Imagine the confidence that comes from a retirement backed by a tangible, proven asset, gold, an asset that's not at the mercy of unpredictable market swings. Gold, silver, platinum, or palladium, the realm is yours to command. Fend off concerns about economic downturns and let your wealth thrive with the timeless security of precious metals. Now, past performance is no guarantee of future results, and always perform your own due diligence before making any investment decision. But this month, the first solid 1/4 ounce gold standard bullion coin ever issued with King Charles image on it can be yours with your own qualifying gold IRA or 401k rollover of $50,000 or higher. You can't go wrong with Noble Gold Investments. Call Noble Gold Investments at 877-646-5347 to get started, or visit noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com. Hey friends, welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's fantastic to have you all back. It's Sean from SGT Report here. Are you sick and tired of the tyranny? Are you tired of the treason? I know I am. And I'm very grateful to have back on the broadcast my longtime friends, Randy Kelton, ruleoflawradio.com, and James Tracy, who's got a new podcast called The Justice Revolution, which you can find over on Rumble, iTunes, all the normal places, and of course, his website, affidavits101.com. First, Randy, welcome back, sir. How are you?
I am good. I'm almost 74, and I'm still here.
You're looking good.
That's a good thing.
It is a good thing. You don't look a day older than 64. Honestly, man, you look great.
Well, I've been lifting weights and trying to take care of myself. I'm feeling better than I was in my 50s.
Well, let me tell you something. I think that the guest also joining us here, James Tracy, may be one of your biggest fans. James, do you think I have that right?
Yeah, I would think so. Randy, how are you, man?
I am good.
Good, good, good.
I don't care what my wife says over and over.
Let me do a screen share, friends. I want to remind everybody what Randy said when we had him on the show May 19th, 2022. So as fate would have it, just over a year ago, here's what Randy said about our beloved republic.
We can use their treaty for toilet paper. Now, in some countries, the government may be able to tell the people what to do. This is not one of them. The only people who are commanded by Biden are those who choose to be commanded by Biden.
All right, I'll pause it there. We're going to do a little news roundup here before we get rolling, though. But one thing I want to say about that World Health Organization treaty, Randy, is that Evidently, it will be codified and it will take power, and they say it will usurp our sovereignty starting July 2024. So they're steamrolling ahead with their tyrannical plans, Randy. What say you?
I say they can steamroll all they want to. They're going to have the American public to deal with. And the United States is just a union of 50 individual sovereign nations. Good luck on getting those 50 individual sovereign nations to dance to your tune. The move is away from Biden and his tyranny. We have seen what they've produced for us. I expect the next elections to change things dramatically, especially if I can get people to use their power to control the elections. The one key term they need to understand, or key number they need to know, is 911. You see one of those poll workers doing something that doesn't look right, it may be right. Doesn't matter. If it doesn't look right, just call 911 and ask a policeman to arrest him. And when the policeman goes in there telling them, I got a guy out here who's trying to get me to arrest you, we will get their attention.
Yeah,
we have to do that. And it is my mission to find people who are willing to stand up and do their job as a citizen in this republic.
Yes. Yes. Hey, Randy, would you do us a favor? Maybe move your microphone a little closer to your mouth. You're getting a little hard to hear. There you go.
Okay, I think he's just trying to get me to cover my face up. Cause
that's not true.
I'm so much prettier than he is.
Well done,
that
James.
Is true. That part is true.
Let me just do a little teaser for the audience here, guys. There's a $500 million lawsuit against the highest judge in Texas, which is intended to, number one, return the system to the individual, and number two, to open up the grand jury process to individuals. That's one of Randy's lawsuits. Also, we could do an entire show on foreclosure, as Randy has helped hundreds of people with lawsuits, and Randy is taking a novel approach to addressing the fees on the HUD-1 settlement statement as fraudulent. But today, for sure, I want to get to this. We should talk about how to engage local, quote-unquote, officials to force them to follow the law. Before we go there, guys, I want to do a little news roundup. Just two things that appeared back-to-back, as I live in the Matrix, I swear. I live in the Matrix. When Apple hits an all-time high ahead of their new AR-VR headset slave device launch, it makes sense that the very next news item would, of course, be Gary Gensler in the criminal SEC filing a lawsuit against Binance, slamming Bitcoin because Gary Gensler, Joe Biden, and of course, Senator Elizabeth Warren, building that anti-crypto army she says she's building, they're targeting Bitcoin because they want you, dear slave, on their federally issued central bank digital currency, the CBDC. But here's the line item I wanted to share with James. James, it's right up your alley and it's in your neck of the woods. A parent complained about pornography and somehow got the Bible yanked from Utah school districts. Welcome to the Matrix of Pain, my friends. Honestly, we are living in the Matrix where the demons seem to have some level of control, James. What do you make of that last news item or any of the previous items?
Well, I saw that news item there for that school district. I was actually... last week, I was in Mexico with my wife celebrating our 20th anniversary, and I saw that news story, and I just have to chuckle because that particular school district, and I've got no shame in saying who it is, it's Davis School District. I've actually got a lawsuit against them right now. A good friend of mine was unlawfully targeted by that school district for standing up in a school board meeting and speaking his concerns. They tried to have him trespassed, and anyway, long story short, we still have a case in the federal courts right now. It has we're working our way through there. They're going to get a rude awakening real quick. A lot of these quote unquote public servants, like Randy talks about, they're going to get a rude awakening real quick when more and more people start standing up and realizing, you know, hey, this is not. You know, this is not where I must do what you tell me to do because you wear a title or you have a title of some kind. This, you know, you have forgotten who works for who. It's not that I must do whatever you say because you wear the title of superintendent or commissioner such and such or police officer so and so. That's not how this republic works. Remember, see the banner behind me? We the people. All political power is inherent in we the people. All power. So that our public servants can issue, they can do nothing without the consent of we the people, but they have forgotten that. And over the years of, I don't know what's the best word here I'm looking for, Randy, maybe just people have been asleep. They just have gone along to get along.
Bit of a problem with we the people.
Yes. Yes. As
I believe it should say I the individual.
Exactly.
This is not something for the people to fix.
Yes.
It's something for you to fix.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not until, like Randy says there, it's not until more people stand up as individuals and assert their individual sovereignty and their individual rights that this isn't going to change. I mean, that's the sad reality. We're having people, we're having more and more people are being made examples of, but there are good men and women who are fighting up. And, you know, like I mentioned with that school district, the Utah legislatures passed, you know, because parents were bringing concerns of pornographic materials in school libraries that have no business being there. So the Utah legislature passed that law outlawing pornographic material. So what does one of these woke parents do? Well, they complain about the Bible. And so because the school district is a woke school district, they decided to pull the Bible. But guess what's still in those libraries? Other material that has no business being there.
That's right. Well, that's because it's all part of the abusive relationship we are now in with this quote-unquote government on the state level and the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the American people have Stockholm syndrome to the degree that they're allowing this Marxist cultural revolution to continue, because that's what it is. And I want to vet that out just a bit further, guys. I'll do another screen share here because I want to tie this together. First of all, I did note about Gary Gensler that he is a Goldman Sachs criminal bankster. Gary Gensler never did jack diddly to stop the manipulation of precious metals via the paper markets when he was the head of the CFTC. Now that he's the head of the SEC, he's waging war on Bitcoin because he wants you, dear reader, to accept Fed CBDC. The whole system is evil to the core. But here's the part I wanted to share. Pure, unadulterated evil. The Frankfurt School. Engineered collapse. Tavistock Institute. Social engineering of the masses. So the Dodgers are allowing this group, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, to perform or be at or be honored at one of these Dodgers games. These people are not heroes. They are an anti-Christian hate group that performs profane public sex acts and mocks Jesus Christ. Now, the point is this. The cultural revolution is Marxist and communist, and it's meant to destroy our republic from within. So certainly that should be part of our conversation today. How do we stop it? Maybe, James, you should personally sue the guy who got the Bible pulled out of middle schools and grade schools in Utah. What a demon creature.
You know, and I agree. I mean, if I have recourse there, and you know, that's where I live, that's the district that's just to the south of me. So my kids aren't within that school district. I can tell you right now, if things like that happen in my school district, you know, I'll look at the causes of action and I'll see what I could do. I mean, there are other things that we can do to really get back at these people. You know, just a quick thought on that story there about those that sisterhood or whatever those morons call themselves. I saw a story, and I apologize, can't remember his name. One of the pitchers for the Dodgers came out and denounced it. He says, I'm a Christian man, and I don't agree with this.
Yeah, and then they made him apologize. The MLB made him apologize. If you want to get your paycheck, you better go out there and you better kowtow to these people. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, these people who mock Jesus Christ and mock the Bible openly, may God have mercy on their souls, James.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's disgusting, and it has no business being anywhere near us. But, you know, to Randy's point, you know, we start seeing more and more of these ridiculous stories in the news. Of things that are happening on the masses. You know, I'll give you another local story here to my state here in Utah, in southern Utah. One of the cities, one of the mayors took it upon himself to shut down public comments. they are no longer allowed to have public comments in their city meetings. Because again, this mayor has again, some type of a complex or some type of an issue where they think that because they wear the title of mayor, that they can just write policy and then they can pass it off as law. That's not, again, this is a constitutional republic, one where the individual's rights are supposed to be protected and that no one person can have absolute power over everyone, but they have forgotten that. So there is a major push down in that area, which is Southern Utah, where they're pushing back, and good for you. The problem that we see is, like Randy says, is until more people start standing up and saying, hey, I want government out of my life, get away from me. And until more and more people start standing up and asserting those basic things. See, we give away too many of our precious freedoms mm-hmm. in the name of convenience. I mean, I'll give you a quick example. I just told you last week I was in Mexico with my wife for our 20th anniversary. So we come back to the United States. You know, we have our passports and we have everything ready to go. They don't even look at our passports. They just take a picture of your face.
Yeah. The same thing happened to me. We just got back from Puerto Vallarta. Same thing. My wife said, what was that all about?
Yeah.
I said, I don't know. Probably all part of the track and trace system that's rolling out.
Yeah. Yeah. TSA is even now because I travel quite a bit for my job. They're now moving more towards facial recognition as opposed to checking your ID, like your driver's license or your passport, even for travel with, you know, here within the United States. You know, you can opt out of that, which I have chosen to do. It's like, no, I'm not doing that. I don't want my face to be along those lines. You know, I have another example. I have another friend of mine who reached out to me a few weeks ago. She was very concerned. She's in the real estate profession. And the Utah legislature recently passed a law that requires real estate agents to register with the FBI's RAP back system that is constantly monitoring any criminal reports and things of that nature. So what used to happen is if you were to go get a real estate license here in the state, you would have to go get a fingerprint and a background check and you were done. Now they want to maintain that database of those fingerprints and they want to give it over to the FBI and they want the FBI to continually monitor that. Now we've seen recently how well the FBI has done with monitoring data. That's not a system that you want to be a part of. You know, she reached out to me. She's like, this violates my Fourth Amendment right to privacy. Is like, it mm-hmm. absolutely does.
Mm-hmm.
So I helped her. We're in the process of petitioning the legislature to get that changed.
Good.
So there's a lot of things. I mean, and she told me, she called me, she went up to our state legislator to file this petition. And the secretary of the Senate, she says, I have been here for 15 years and I've never seen anybody do this. I was like, well, that's a problem. That's a right that we the people have. We have the right to petition our government for a redress of grievances. So why aren't we doing it? People think the only place you can get a redress of grievance is in the courts. You know, I for one, am a big proponent of that, as Randy will know. But that's not our only avenue. Don't we have elected representatives for a reason? Well, let's hold their feet to the fire. And this is how we do it.
100%. And, you know, Dr. Fred Graves has been on with us, James. And, you know, and you, by the way, along with Fred Graves, have been teaching people how to win in court without an attorney. And Randy Kelton has been an inspiration to all of us. And Randy, let me just ask you about this Marxist Cultural Revolution. When they tell us that less than 2% of the population have more rights than the 98%, and then they get the Bible out of the schools, it's all part of a cultural revolution to destroy our nation. We know that. But then it really results in none of us having any rights at all. How do we defeat that? Do you want to just give us a little insight on that? Because these people are insane.
Let me start by telling you I'm an old guy. I was around in the 60s in the Cultural Revolution. And then I was around in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and 2000. And I don't see a difference. These are cycles. We have the young people standing up and railing in righteous indignation at the old people. We have young new ideas. Your children grow up and they move out of the house and they need to find themselves. They need to establish their own identities. And the Marxists and the communists have used this young population to cultivate their beliefs since there were Marxists and communists. This is not something new. The problem they're having is, and the reason they appear to be so desperate, is that the demographics are changing. There aren't as many young people. Mm-hmm. And the old people like myself are living longer. I was just in Tennessee taking care of my mom. She was determined to make 100. She didn't quite make it. I understand in Korea, the average age of women dying in Korea is 110. The population is aging rapidly. And when we get past those younger formative days, up to 40 or 50, my son has 2 PhDs, thinks he knows everything. I can't talk to him. He doesn't have a clue. But he's beginning to get a clue. He's mid-40s, he's reaching 50. He's beginning to look around, and his politics are moving to the right very rapidly. And I see the Democrats are desperate because they see the politics of the nation moving to the right.
Yeah. Let me just say one thing about that. There's a pundit on YouTube who's still there. He's a Democrat, long time, lifelong Democrat. But he's earned my respect because he's intellectually honest and he sounds more like a libertarian every day. His name's Jimmy Dore. He's a comedian, but he is speaking out against all of the madness because he recognizes it for what it is, and he's got the courage to be intellectually honest about it. And I think age does have a part to play in that, Randy, because Jimmy Dore is probably in his, I don't know, late 50s.
Yeah, see, we get there. This is cyclic. This has been going on forever. That children grow up, they rebel against their parents. Whatever you believe, they believe the opposite. And they fight back and forth with their parents, and they find themselves. And then they find out that their ideas really kind of sucked. And I'm not particularly religious. But if you read the Bible from a non-religious perspective and pay attention to what it tells you, you're reading 6,000 years of accumulated cultural wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to follow the Bible because you believe in God. Follow the Bible because you believe in wisdom.
Yeah.
It says, don't do these things, because if you do these things when you're young, 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the road, they will come back and bite you in the behind.
Yeah.
It is cultural wisdom, and it just takes a while. What we're looking at is just cyclic. The young people make the most noise. When I was that age, I made the most noise. I stood up and I went to war to fight for this country. I was young and I was naive and I was full of myself. Boy, did I get an education. I'm not so concerned as a lot of people are. The United States is still the United States. Things get good for a while, then they go bad for a while, then they get good again. Because we stand up and straighten them out, and we're at the point of those of us who have been around a while taking the reins and straighten these things out. I'm doing everything I can to build tools for that purpose.
Yeah.
It buoys my spirit to hear that you're not as concerned as many of us are, and because I'm very concerned. In fact, James, we're looking at options in case they steal another election, because I don't want to stick around for them to finalize their Marxist cultural revolution. Look what happened when Kissinger empowered Pol Pot to do what he did. Tens of millions of people were slaughtered. I mean, this is a rinse and repeat strategy out of the playbook of the New World Order criminals, in my view. And I don't want to stick around and watch that happen in our country. And I just think we're running out of time if they steal another election in 2024, James.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, you know, but to Randy's point, there's that saying, and I don't know where it comes from, so I can't give anybody credit for it, but, you know, the wise man learns from his mistakes, but the super wise man learns from others' mistakes. I mean, that's what Randy was saying with the Bible, right? whether you're religious or not, there's 6,000 years of history there. There's 6,000 years of people doing things the wrong way and not learning from it, and other people learning from it. So why don't we learn from our history? Why don't we look at it? I mean, I've always thought of myself, you know, I'm 41, so I've got no shame in hiding that, you know, and I always thought that I was a freedom loving individual, and you know, and I thought I knew my rights. I didn't know my rights. I mean, if you just sit back and you look at the things that you deal with, that we as individuals deal with on a daily basis, the things that we deal with, it would make the founders of this nation sick to their stomachs.
Yeah.
Because they fought, they bled, and a lot of them died to give us something different. And we had it for a while until it was perverted. You know, I know Randy's no fan of this organization, and I've said this before. I feel as though the Bar Association is one of the most evil organizations on this planet, because they have taken our beautiful justice system and they have perverted it, they have twisted it, and they have taken something that is actually fairly simple to learn and understand, and they have made it complicated, and they've made the average everyday man and woman believe that the only way they can get any kind of redress from a legal perspective is if they go out and fork over hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to some bar licensed attorney. Mm-hmm. And that's just not true. I mean,
I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, I knew you were going to get there. I knew you were going to get there.
I've spent the last 30 years working on a project that is designed to eliminate the profession of lawyer.
Good.
And get
sign me up.
Get lawyers to pay us to do it. I'm in the process of implementing that. You know, I have this $500 million lawsuit. The lawsuit was not filed to get $500 million. It was filed as a way of getting the attention of the highest judges in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Something is horribly wrong.
Yes.
But there is no evil person we can demonize beyond all retribution and then rail at in righteous indignation. Nobody did this. This is something that evolved out of the system. And you and I, we didn't stand up and do something about it.
Yeah.
We mostly felt like we didn't have the tools. Well, I filed this lawsuit, and I sued each member of the highest court in Texas personally. Now, you may ask, who the heck am I? Well, the thing that makes me the most powerful guy in the room, I'm nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a politician. I'm not a public official, a policeman, a judge, a prosecutor, a bailiff, a clerk. They are all public servants.
Mm-hmm.
They're the servants. Me, I am the master.
Yes.
They forget that I'm the master at their professional peril.
Mm-hmm.
I will take them on, and I'm doing everything I can to show everybody else not only how to take them on, but how much fun it is.
Oh, it is fun.
There is nothing more fun than playing a public official like a cheap fiddle.
Hey, Randy, can we ask you, though, just for details about that lawsuit? Because I know one of the goals is to return the system to the individual, and the other is to open up the grand jury to individuals. Can you just give us the Cliff's Notes on that? What does that mean to we laymen who are listening?
15.09 Texas Code of Criminal Procedure is like no other state. It says that when a complaint is presented to a magistrate complete in accordance with 1505, and 1505 establishes the requisites of a complaint, the magistrate shall issue a warrant forthwith. Now, what part of that is hard to understand? The legislature did not say may, might, or can if he wants to. They did not say, which other states do, that the magistrate shall examine into the sufficiency of the allegation. It doesn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
It says they're to issue a warrant forthwith. And then when the person is arrested, or in lieu of a warrant, they can issue a summons.
Mm-hmm.
One set of statutes reference, they could issue a friendly summons. Okay, that works for me. But when I perceive that a public official has violated law relating to his office, and I go down to a public official and I tell him, like I did a judge recently in Victoria, Texas, I had sued a justice of the peace because I gave him 4 criminal complaints against 2 bad guys. And the JP said, well, Mr. Kelton, are you an attorney? Oh, no, no, no. I sleep well at night, keep my hands in my own pockets. Thank you very much. Well, Mr. Kelton, have you talked to an attorney? Ah, don't waste my time with those ignorant shysters. They don't know squat. He said, well, since you're not an attorney, I'm not even going to read these. He threw them down on the counter and he stormed out in indignation. I watched him leave and I was standing there smiling. And the clerks are watching me and they've got this confused look on their face. And I turned to the clerks and said, well, we'll see how that works out for him. Took out my cell phone, dialed 911. I want somebody down here to arrest this judge. Because 15.09 told him to do a specific thing. He failed to perform a duty he was required to perform, and in the process, he denied me the full free access to or enjoyment of my right to the equal protection of the laws of the state of Texas, and I want him arrested.
And what was the result of that 911 call? Because I got to tell you, Randy, so many folks listening now feel that we live in a system that's so tyrannical, and the police are in on a lot of the cover-ups. I'm going to do a show about some crazy stuff going on in Boulder, Colorado regarding pedophilia here in the future. A lot of folks would be afraid they're going to call 911 on a judge, and the cops will show up and they'll arrest the guy who called 911.
I've called 911 lots of times. I've not been arrested, nor has there been any indication that they might consider such a thing. You are the victim. You call 911 and this policeman shows up. In this case, it was a young city policeman. And he said, Mr. Kelton, what can I do? Are you the one that called 911? I said, yes, I am. He said, what can I do for you? You can go in there and arrest the judge. Well, you could tell he was somewhat taken aback. He said, well, I can't arrest the judge. I said, of course you can. Just go in there and throw the cuffs on him and drag him off to jail. Well, what did he do? I said, he refused to issue warrants when I gave him criminal complaints. He said, well, what's wrong with that? 39.03 Texas Penal Code. I recommend everybody get the penal code and code of criminal procedure or criminal procedure code for your state and read it twice.
Yeah.
Don't try to understand it the first time. Just read it through. Then go back to the beginning and read it again. When you read it the second time, you'll start making connections front to back to middle. When you get through it the second time, you'll know it better than a prosecutor does. Mm-hmm. You'll know it better than the judges do. And I can tell you, there is nothing like going into a public office and asking them to do something in terms of the law that commands them to do it. I got this rule. Never ask a public official to do anything you actually want them to do. Because you never ask a public official to do anything that the law does not compel them to do. If the law doesn't compel them to do something, they can't do it. They can't just do what they want to. They have to do what the law tells them to do. But if they don't do what the law compels them to do, and in the process they deny you in the full and free access to or enjoyment of a right, well, that is a Class A misdemeanor in every state. In Texas, it's official oppression. In most states, it's official misconduct. In the Fed, it's 18 U.S. Code 242. And every state has a statute that reflects it. It is our catch-all.
Yep. Yep.
So you go in and ask them to do something they're not going to want to do. And when they don't do it, 911. Now, whatever you do, do not give them legal advice. Oh, I got this right. I got that right. You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to do this. No, don't do that. If you do that, They won't take that as fair warning. They'll take it as a threat and accuse you of being agitated. So don't. I asked a clerk in Arlington, Texas. I want to see, I gave her 10 cause numbers. She was in a municipal court. Are you an attorney? Oh, no, no, no. I sleep with it, not keep my hands in my pockets. Are you the accused? Oh, no, no, no. I'm a good guy. I never do anything wrong. Well, if you're not the attorney or the accused, you can't see these. Now, I could have told her what the law said. I could have told her that the Constitution says all courts shall be public. But I'm not her attorney. If she wants an attorney, she can go hire one. Mm-hmm. I'm just the guy who holds you responsible. So a big bailiff is standing over there with his arms folded, staring out at everybody like he's the baddest guy in the room. Hey, you, get over here. Well, he didn't like that. What can I do for you? Arrest that woman. Well, why would I arrest her? She wouldn't show me any records. Well, who are you? Why am I in Kiln? Are you an attorney? Oh, no, no, I can't sleep well at night, blah, blah, blah. Are you the accused? Oh, no, 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 I'm a good guy. Well, if you're not the attorney or the accused, you can't see these. Oh, wow. You shouldn't have said that.
Hold that thought.
Took out my cell phone. He said, you can't use a cell phone in this building. I looked up at him and said, are you going to interfere with a 911 call? And the clerk said, oh, leave him alone. He's just trying to do something so he can try to get you arrested. Sorry, hon, too late for that, 911. They wound up sending his boss out. And all of the stuff I would have said to the clerk or to the bailiff, I said to the bailiff's boss, and I read him the riot act. I just crawled down his throat. And all he could do was stand there and say, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Now arrest these two. Oh, sir, I can't arrest these two. Of course you can arrest them. Just throw the cuffs on them and drag them off to jail. Now, I didn't get anybody arrested. But I can assure you, if you go to Arlington, Texas today and ask to see a stack of records, you won't get any crap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is how we do it. This is our job. When I asked the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court by verified affidavit to issue a warrant for the governor based on the 150-page criminal complaint I filed against the governor for all of these executive orders that he filed, the Chief Justice of the Supreme did not issue a warrant. Now I will sue him personally in his individual capacity. This is what I did to all of the judges of the Court of Criminal Appeals. I sued them personally. When you're dealing with public officials, you want to find a duty they're commanded to perform. Mm-hmm. Because when they are commanded to perform a specific duty over which they have no discretion, that's considered an administrative act, not a judicial act. And since it is administrative, they have zero immunity.
Yep.
So I went in and played this JP like a cheap fiddle. Got him to refuse to take those complaints. Never ask a public official to do anything you actually want them to. I sued him personally, went to court in the county court before a county judge. This JP is in the court as a defendant, and I handed that judge 5 criminal complaints, some against the JP, some against the sheriff, just a smattering of other public officials. And he refused to even read them. So in court, I quoted Walker v. Packer. Walker v. Packer says, a judge has no discretion in properly applying the law to the facts. A failure to do so is an abuse of discretion. And an abuse of discretion that has the effect of denying me the full and free access to or enjoyment of right is a criminal act under 39.03 Penal Code, official oppression. Mr. Bailiff, did you hear that? The bailiff just stood there with his arms folded. Arrest that judge. Oh, you should have been there. You could have heard a pin drop. The bailiff just stood there. Mr. Bailiff, you're standing mute. Arrest that judge. And the judge sat there and kept his mouth shut because he knew, and he knew that I knew, one word out of you, Bubba, tampering with the witness, 3605, obstruction of justice, 3606, both of them felonies.
Mm-hmm.
Whether my complaints were valid or not was irrelevant. When I asked the bailiff to arrest the judge, I was invoking the bailiff's duty. And if the judge interferes with that, he's committed the criminal act regardless of what I was doing.
Yeah.
We all can do this. If you haven't asked a bailiff to arrest a judge, you have not lived.
Let me jump in here, guys, and just ask you if we could talk about something just a little bit more tangible. James, Randy's obviously got so much experience in this area. You've been mm-hmm. inspired by him. You've done some of these same things. And I know you're all about holding local officials accountable, right? Mm-hmm. And suing yes. them personally, which I love. We've talked about that many, many times. In the time we have left, and by the way, James, how much time do you have left to join us?
I've got as much time as we need.
Okay. Randy, I want to talk about tangible stuff for the audience. I know you've helped hundreds of people with lawsuits regarding foreclosures, and we really should talk about how to engage local officials to force them to follow the law. Which tangible thing do you want to talk about next?
Let me speak to foreclosure first.
Okay.
Most of the Patriot movement takes on securitization.
Yeah.
And that's a false narrative. It's a waste of time. Once you write a promise to pay and give that promise to pay to the lender has bought the property and gave it to you. In return, he asked for a promise to pay. Now, that promise to pay is a tangible object. He can do with that whatever he wants to. He can sell it to anybody he wants to. It's not your business. And these guys are taking on securitization and goes to what the guy does with it. Yes, it can cause a problem, but you don't have a claim until it does cause a problem. When he comes into court, he can't prove up his holder status of the mortgage. That is really a tough fight. I've got a much better one. Anyone here who's ever bought a property, you sit down at closing and the title company sets in front of you a HUD-1 settlement statement. That's the legal size document with all the fees and costs on it. Go to the second page, starting at 701 down through 1400. It lists all of these fines and fees. So I have a question for anybody who's ever purchased a property. When you sat at the closing table and they put that HUD-1 settlement statement in front of you, did they provide evidence to demonstrate that the amounts charged were not otherwise forbidden to be charged by law, that they were for services actually rendered, that the amounts charged were reasonable, and that the lender did not take an undisclosed markup on the amounts charged? Did you get any evidence of where these fees came from? Nobody gets any evidence. They just take this HUD-1 settlement statement and they fill it out. Mm-hmm. So what you do is get you an amortization schedule. You pull them down offline. And you put in your amounts on your loan and run an amortization on it. And it'll show how much you have to pay each month and how much comes out of the goes to principal and how much goes to interest. Then set that aside and do it again. Except this time you assume that all those fines and fees included on the HUD-1 settlement statement, now they're all bogus. Every one of them is fraudulent. They just made all this crap up.
Mm-hmm.
So you subtract that from the original principal as a first payment. Then run the note out with the payment amount, the amount that the bank is telling you to pay, or the note tells you to pay. You'll be surprised at the difference you'll find at the end. Generally, about 250 to 260, you'll go to zero. Your principal will zero out. All the rest of that's overpayment.
Mm-hmm.
We just filed suit in Arizona, making a claim against the lender for almost three times the amount of the original principal. Because in the matter of fraud, you do not sue for the amount you were actually defrauded of. You sue for the amount you would have been defrauded of had their plan ran to fruition. Mm-hmm. And in a 30-year note, you sue for the full amount. But you don't sue for that either. You sue for triple.
Three times.
Yeah. Now, when you go into court, you're going to have this number. And anybody who's ever filed a suit, they sit around scratching their head and they say, how do I come up with a number? Well, we got one. I got a number. I can show you how I got that number to the penny. Now, the other side's going to come into court and they're going to say, oh, Your Honor, this is all bogus. And they're going to argue back and forth. They're going to say, we should only charge this much. And we're going to say back and forth, back and forth. But at the end of the day, there's only one number the jury is going to remember. And that's the number you walked in the door with. And we tell them, guys, you know, I could be wrong here. Some of these fees could actually be valid. There's my favorite one is in Texas. And it's a dollar fee you pay to the state. Oh, I love that one. I include that in the calculation. If they prove up that that's valid, why, I'll take that off the calculation. Everyone you prove up, I'll take off the calculation. Guess how many amounts have been proved up by borrowers or lenders? It's a real easy number.
Zero.
Zero. Reason? If they prove up one and don't prove up another, that creates the adverse inference that it is exactly what I said it was. Fraud. Mm-hmm. And all you need is $30 worth of fraud to rescind the whole mortgage for fraud.
Can I ask you guys a question, James? Can you translate for us? I mean, because what I'm hearing Randy say is, because like we're trying to help people that might be foreclosed upon, right? Because that's going to happen more and more as interest rates skyrocket and the economy crashes. So, you know, we don't want people drummed out of their homes, certainly not if there's fraud involved. But am I hearing Randy correctly when I assume maybe all of us who have mortgages are being defrauded and maybe we could all file such lawsuits? Can you translate for us?
Yeah. You're not wrong. It's pretty simple. I mean, when you look at one of those HUD one settlement statements and, you know, I can pull up a sample one if you want me to share my screen and I can show you.
Sure. Yeah.
What that looks like. HUD one statement. So let me find one here real quick and you can look at
while he's looking. Always on a HUD one, you will find a document preparation fee. You'll find warehousing fees. Those are fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
Document anything that is the normal part of doing business. You're not allowed to charge. It was intended that you take that from the interest that's paid.
Yes.
But they add it to the head of the note and charge you interest on it. $1 added to the head of the note is the last dollar paid off. So you pay 30 years on each one of those.
Mm. So what Randy's saying is, let's just make this simple. Let's say you buy a house for $200,000 and there's $3,500 of additional fees added to one of these HUD settlement statements. You're paying interest on that $3,500 over that course of that 30-year loan.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the authority. They don't have the right to do that. There's nothing in law that allows them to do that. The law states that they are only allowed to charge interest on the principal amount lended. So where people get lost into the weeds, and you know, and Randy talks about this, there was a big movement a while ago about the whole show me the note theory. You don't have the note. You can't enforce the terms of the note. And there was a lot of people were talking about, well, under the Uniform Commercial Code, under UCC laws, and they're not wrong. It's not a winning argument. I am a big proponent of find the winning argument, keep it as simple as possible. So I have up on the screen a sample HUD 1 settlement statement, U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Most of this stuff here on the first page is, you know, it's going to have the name of the borrower, the name of the seller, the name of the lender. It'll have the purchase price and stuff here. But what Randy's talking about is you come down here onto page 2, and this is where you start to see all the settlement charges. Line 701 all the way down here to line 1300. Yeah, all of these charges.
Line 701 cannot be more than 1% of the note.
Exactly.
No reason.
All of these fees here, what's happening is they're being rolled into the loan and you're paying interest on all of this. That was never how this is supposed to be. You were supposed to come to the table with the money to pay these fees, and then they would be deducted from the overall balance of the loan. So again, like I'm saying, if your purchase price of the property is $200,000, you should not be financing more than $200,000. But what they're doing is they're wrapping all of these things in. And what happens is just like what Randy's talking about. He's like, okay, so I'm going to sue you and say, I want you to prove these charges up. Come to the table and show me where in black letter written law you have A, the authority to do this, and B, that I am required to repay you over 30 years. You're not going to find it. I mean, again, these
show me the transaction.
You're exactly
collecting these fees from vendors. Sure, mm-hmm. The vendor sent you a bill.
Yeah. So there's an appraisal fee. There's a loan origination fee. There's an insurance application fee. There's an assumption fee, mortgage insurance premium for this, hazard insurance. Okay, where's all of these bills? I have a right to know.
I'm working on a mortgage now out of Arizona, $133,600. And the origination fee is $12,900.
Oh my gosh.
That's insane.
On a $130,000 loan?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Come across crazy stuff in these mortgages. They screw up everything. Instead of taking on these esoteric issues, read the deed of trust or mortgage document.
Yeah.
And read the note. I always do an amortization of the note itself to see what the note says you're supposed to pay. Then you take the truth in lending statement.
Yep.
And it has a payment amount. About 1% of the time, it matches what you agreed to pay on the note. And I've asked a number of people how they come up with the numbers on the HUD, on the truth in lending statement. Nobody can tell me.
They don't have an answer.
They just pull it out of thin air. That's what they charge you. So instead of taking on these esoteric issues, go to the numbers.
Yeah.
Go to the dollars and cents and the pennies. That makes them nuts.
So there's something else you can do, and this is just one extra step for being able to add additional causes of action, because there are federal laws that are in place to protect consumers. So Randy just mentioned the truth in lending. That's under the Real Estate and Settlement Procedures Act, otherwise known as RESPA. There's also another little nugget under that federal law that says that if you as a borrower submit written requests of your lender and or servicer or both. So oftentimes in the mortgage world, it's very, very, very rare that you will actually pay those who actually lent you the money. And I'll give you a good example. So I just recently refinanced my property and I went and closed with the bank that I took out the loan with. They up and turned right around and sold it. So I made one payment to them. Then I get notification. I'm now supposed to make payments to some other bank out of Texas, and they don't actually own my loan. The entity that owns my loan is Fannie Mae, or so they say, but they're just collecting payments on their behalf. So under that federal law, you have a right to know where your payments are going, who's accepting those payments, and an accounting of all of it, all of that. So you can actually submit what's called a qualified written request, which I did, and I'll share here on my screen. So, and I got nothing to hide here, so I have no problem with sharing my information here, but this is the entity here, M&T Bank, is who's collecting my loan information, and I submitted a qualified written request, and I asked them for all of this. I said, I have some concerns here. I said, and I'm not going to go through this, and I'm happy to share this with you, Sean. You can send this out to your listeners if you like, or they. I go over all of this information on my podcast and on my show, The Justice Revolution. But under this law here, it's 12 USC 2605, under the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, they must respond. And I asked for, I have some concerns on all of this, and I'm asking for clarification for my understanding of the various sales, transfers, funding source, legal and beneficial ownership, charges, debits, transactions, reversals, actions, payments, analysis, and records relating to the servicing of this account from its origination to the present date. Do you think I got that information? Randy, did I get that information when I asked this of my lender and my servicer? What do you think?
Oh, no way you're going to get that information.
No, I did not.
The reason is when a lender changes servicers,
mm-hmm.
they send the new servicer the amount owed, but they don't send them all of the payment history.
No, they do not.
And why they don't do that, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But your new servicer can't answer these questions.
No.
In my qualified written request, I asked for a complete accounting of all payments.
Yep.
And disbursements from the payments. They don't have it.
So what happened, James?
So I'll tell you, I got the letter right here that I got back from the servicer. This is what they said. Said, we acknowledge receipt of this correspondence regarding this. We note your written demands contain numerous requests for admissions denials and documentation purportedly made under the authority of provisions of federal and state laws and regulations. Your reliance on these laws and regulations is inopposite. Accordingly, please be advised that our response to your demands should not be construed as an admission or denial of any fact or circumstances beyond the information contained in this letter. Furthermore, M&T Bank does not authorize any party to exercise any of its rights under the mortgage documents you had executed unless authorized in a legal document. So basically what they said here is we're making legal conclusions that you don't have a right to ask for this, which is bogus. There's plenty of court case decisions that state otherwise. That's what does Randy say? What was the legislative intent? Why did they write this law the way that they did? Because people were getting harmed. I mean, gosh, 2008, anyone? Does anybody remember what happened in 2008? There's a reason why Congress wrote the law the way that they did, because we, the consumers, have a right to know, hey, I took out a loan in good faith with you, stating that I am willing to repay this money to you. One, I want to know that there's actual money involved in this transaction. Two, where's it going? Who am I paying? I get statements from you, but you just state that you don't actually own my loan. You're just servicing it. Okay, where is the money going? Where is that accounting history? I mean, this is what's so asinine about all of this stuff, Sean, is there is this thing known as GAAP, G-A-A-P, Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. Pretty simple, right? Account A has money in it. We set up account B. We move money from account A to account B to fund this transaction. Pretty simple, right? Common sense. So why are they doing everything that they can to hide account A from us? And why is it that your reliance on these laws and regulations is inopposite? Really? So are you a lawyer now? What did you just say earlier, Randy? You're not going to advise these people of the laws, right?
Right.
So why are you advising me of the laws?
So what are you going to do, James? What's the follow-up?
I'm going to have some fun with these guys. Believe you me. I'm going to send them a follow-up letter because, again, there's a reason why I do things the way that I do. I am using all of these laws that are written for the conduct of public servants and public serving agencies such as these to their detriment. So there was a while ago, back in the 60s, there was a law passed called the Administrative Procedures Act. And the idea behind this was to make things simpler and easier from the administrative side of things. And it outlines exactly what happens if you send these things. Now, under the RESPA law that I mentioned earlier, if I send a qualified written request, they're required to respond to every single thing that I ask for. And if they don't have it, they just need to respond back that we don't have the information that you're seeking, where it doesn't exist. They didn't do that in my case. They just ignored it. Mm-hmm. They ignored half of it. So what does the law state that I can do? Well, I can send a follow-up letter and say, hey, I need clarification here. So there's option number two, right? Second chance. You get another chance to do this the right way. If they fail to do that, guess what that federal law, the RESPA law, gives me the right to do? I have a right to sue them for violations of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act because they have not been forthcoming with me as to who actually owns my loan, who it is that the payments are going to, where's the accounting history, what were all these fees for? And I can sue them for, like Randy's talking about, three times the amount of my loan. That's just the treble damages. We haven't even talked about punitive damages. And there's case law that stipulates punitive damages can be sought for upwards of 200 times the amount of actual damages. If more and more people started doing these things, do you think that these mortgage companies would continue to do things the way they do?
Right. Let me ask you just real quickly, because I do want to talk about that last line item before we lose you guys. What recompense are you looking for out of these people? What do you wish that letter would have said? What fees could they have divulged to you? Maybe we're not collected properly. You've been overcharged. You're paying 30-year mortgage rates on all these fees that shouldn't be there. In a perfect world, what could they have said? What were you looking for? What were you hoping they might say?
Well, in a perfect world, they would have said, in review of this information, we found errors and it shouldn't have taken place this way. Here's a refund of your monies, or here's a credit, or whatever the case may be. That's the perfect world, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't go into a transaction with someone else with the intent to try and get out of it, or with the intent to defraud them or find some legal loophole, so to speak. But the laws, the federal laws, the state laws, they're in place to govern the actions to protect consumers such as myself from unsuspecting fraud that takes place. And it's disgusting how, these companies learned nothing from 2008. They got their hands slapped big time. They didn't do anything. They didn't learn anything. They're continuing to go right back into it. We're in a bubble again. It's going to burst any day now. And it's going to make, where I'm living here in Utah, we have seen property values triple and quadruple way, way too fast. So it's not sustainable because they continue to do these things and they continue to lend monies the way that they do. So in a perfect world, they would have come back to me and said, yeah, you know what? In reviewing of your file, we found mistakes. We found errors. It looks like we need to either A, do the transaction over again, or B, we need to refund you some money.
Mm-hmm.
No, instead they doubled down and said, you know what? It's kind of like that judge when Randy went to the Justice of Peace and said, take my criminal complaints. He's like, psh, I'm not doing that. Well, let's see how well that works out for you, Bubba.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. And I know you'll keep us up to speed on how that goes for you because James is a regular guest around these parts. All right. So lastly, I want to talk to you guys today about how to engage. I love that word, engage. Local, and I hate this word, officials. I can't tell you how much I hate that word. We hear it all the time now in our representative form of government, a republic by and for the people. We have officials. Ugh, it sounds like China. How do we engage local officials to force them to follow the law? I want your thoughts, both of you, on this.
Randy?
who wants to go first?
Yeah. Randy, you go first on this one.
Yeah. Oh, you just go down and ask them to do something they're not going to want to do.
Yeah.
And then when they don't do it, boom, you hammer them good. And I can tell you from experience, it's great fun. And we need to understand it this way. I do not go in with any kind of angst anger or animosity toward my public officials.
No.
I think of my public officials like I do my grandkids. I love them dearly. But if one of them runs out in the road, I'm fixing to tan his hide.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I have any anger or animosity, because I don't want them falling into bad patterns.
Yeah.
So when I find my public officials falling into bad patterns, I go in and I invoke that pattern. Then I sting them for it. I had a clerk recently. I went in and got a ticket, went in and filed some motions. She never had that happen before. So she didn't get noted that I showed up. And she sent a notice to the Texas Department of Public Safety saying that I failed to appear.
Whoops.
And then I went to renew my license, and they wouldn't renew out my license because I failed to appear. So I charged her with Class A misdemeanor, tampering with the government document. She said, well, it was just an honest mistake. Yeah, it was an honest mistake on my part when I forgot to renew my license. Life's tough. Deal with it.
No
anger or animosity.
You know, the purpose behind what Randy does, Sean, is it's not because you're angry with these people. It's not because, you know, it's you against the big bad man. It's like Randy says, we want to change behavior. I mean, the law is written the way it's written to govern the practices of our public officials who are in place to serve us. Their only job is to serve us. But see, the problem is they sit there and go, well, that's not in my job description. My policies and procedures that I was given or that I was trained on don't tell me I'm supposed to do that. I'll give you another little nugget, and maybe we can touch about this on another day. Property taxes.
Yeah, I know. Don't get me started.
Property taxes. Well, hey, we need to talk, Sean, because that is another area where our public servants have completely lost. They are way out in the weeds thinking that they have the right to tax anything and everything because it's within the circle or within the square on the map that makes up their county. These are what we're talking about. We don't do the things we do because we have anger or strife or violence in our hearts at all. I mean, it's none of the above. It's like Randy says, he's not suing the Chief Justice in Texas for $500 million because he wants $500 million. He's doing it because he wants to affect change. And if more and more of us stand up to do these things, if we take on the fight against our mortgage companies, if we take on the fight against our public officials, if we take on the fight against these policy enforcers who have been woefully and inadequately trained because they're trained to follow their policies and procedures. They're not trained to follow the ultimate contract that we the people have with them, which is the Constitution and every state's Constitution. I mean, there are things in place to protect our individual rights and liberties, but these agencies, these cities, these towns, these counties, these municipalities have said, you know what? That just takes too much time. We can't ensure all of our citizens' constitutional due process rights. It takes way too much time. You know, if someone's arrested, it takes too much time to find a magistrate to determine there was probable cause for the arrest. We'll get to that later. You know, let's not worry about all these things. Let's just start prosecuting people administratively instead of constitutionally as is required and just see if somebody catches us.
Can I ask you something? So yeah. Just for a concrete example regarding this, let's just use that mayor's unilateral, despotic, unconstitutional dictate of no more public comments.
Yeah.
Do you file a criminal complaint? Do you file a lawsuit? Both? Like, what is the process you'd recommend for people who live under that tyrannical jurisdiction of that nutcase mayor?
Yeah. So, and I can give you a great example of that. I have a friend of mine who, and we may have talked about this before, Sean.
We did.
His name is Mike Brown, and he's got nothing to hide. He was actually in a Senate committee meeting during our legislative session, not this year, but last year. And he was, for lack of time, he was hauled out of the meeting because
of a T-shirt, right?
He was wearing a t-shirt that said "We the People," but that wasn't the ultimate reason. He had a sticker that said "Vote Yes" for this proposed legislation. Well, long story short, the committee chair didn't want the stickers. He asked people to remove the stickers. He eventually removed the sticker, but he was asking why he had to remove the sticker. No one would give him an answer, and instead they had him thrown out of the meeting because they didn't like him asking questions. So what he did in that case was he filed criminal complaints against every single one of those state officers. They were all state troopers. Filed criminal complaints with their boss, with the attorney general. Would you believe nothing happened? Randy, can you believe that? Nothing happened? So
I can believe that.
Can you believe that?
Did he sue them personally?
He actually, yes, he sued them personally and officially in federal court. And we are at the point now where he's got a good friend who's a very good, again, don't get me wrong when I say the Bar Association bad. The Bar Association is bad, okay? But there are members within the organization that are very good people. And we've got a gentleman who's a very, very good one of those individuals. He's a licensed bar attorney, and he reached out and said, "Hey, you know, you guys are being stonewalled because you're going at this pro se," which is unfortunate. Randy knows what that's like. So he's stepping in. We're going to amend the complaint. We're going to add the state on as a defendant. And I expect we'll see a settlement for that here in the next 2 or 3 months. So what happened now is that state senator now just cost the state, I don't know, a couple million dollars, maybe more. So we'll see what happens. But that's what you do. So those people in that southern Utah city file criminal complaints against that mayor with the chief of police, with the county sheriff. If nothing happens there, great. Now you're being sued personally. And you can sue them in federal district court for violations and deprivations of rights. There's a cause of action, Title 42, 1983.
There's a methodology here.
Exactly.
You go in and sue as a pro se. And as a pro se, you can do all this dirty, rotten stuff.
It's fun.
Lawyers are not going to do this because the judges can issue sanctions against the lawyer at the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. If you want a lawyer to work for you, you need to give him some plausible deniability. So you go in and do all this rotten stuff. You bar grieve the lawyers at the drop of a hat. You file judicial conduct complaints against the judge. You just make a nuisance of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you call in the lawyer, and he comes in, and he's got all this stuff before the court. And he gets to say to the court, "Your Honor, don't blame me for all this. I didn't file all this. I just inherited it."
Yep.
Now he's got plausible deniability. And the only thing you want the lawyer for is to negotiate a deal.
Yep. That's exactly where we are.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, this is how we beat them.
Yep. It's the politics of it, right? You've become that hot iron that nobody wants to touch. And you know, these, unfortunately, and when you're in federal district court, there's the, you know, your cases are handed off to magistrate judges. That's a story for another day, but they just look at, "Oh, pro se, that's going to be at the very bottom of my list." They're at the very, very bottom. I mean, I'll give you good examples. We've had motions sitting before the court that are sitting there for 6, 7, and 8 months before the court issues a ruling. Now, is that timely? Does anybody feel like that's timely? Now, the federal court will say, "Yeah, that's timely." But to me, to the average everyday United States citizen of this great republic, that's not a timely redress of my issues or the issues. Because again, if I'm bringing a claim against public servants, and while that claim is being litigated, they can continue to harass me or do other things. I need the court to intervene to stop. But if they're just taking their sweet time because I'm pro se, which they all do. But here's something very interesting. And Randy, you probably know this. Do you guys know the percentage of cases that get remanded back to the district courts from the courts of appeals that are pro ses? Do you know what that number is, Randy?
No, I don't.
So upwards of 60 to 70% of the cases that are appealed that are pro ses, of those, close to 30% of those cases are being remanded back to the district courts because they did something that they shouldn't have done. So what that tells me is that our courts of appeals are getting it. The federal courts of appeals are getting it. And that if you do not get the redress you're looking for at the district court level, there's an adult in the room somewhere at the federal district court, at the federal appellate court level, that's going to look at that and go, all right, you guys, what the crap are you doing?
Let me explain that. What's happening here is the trial court has a whole different perspective than the Court of Appeals.
Yes.
It is the trial court's duty to try to find a just adjudication of cases.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the purpose of the appellate court. The appellate court's job is to maintain the corpus juris, the sanctity of the body of law.
Yes.
So they're very careful about their rulings based on how their rulings can be used by someone else. Here in Texas, the Fifth Circuit just ruled that this SWAT team that went into this house to get this guy out who was barricading himself in there, they did $70,000 worth of damage. And when the woman came to the city and said, you guys destroyed my house, you need to fix it, they told her, sorry, the police department is just doing their job and they have immunity. Well, they come across an anachronism, a lawyer who could think. And he sued the city based on eminent domain and improper taking. And the Court of Appeals looked at that, and the trial court just denied it all. The Court of Appeals looked at it and said, this is a problem for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we rule against them, we change the nature of the law itself. And every other lawyer can use our ruling to create some horrible injustice. We have to rule in a way that maintains the body of law. And they said eminent domain is eminent domain. And an improper taking under eminent domain is a constitutional issue.
Yep.
It changes everything.
Yeah, where's my just compensation? Yes. Fifth Amendment. Where's my just compensation? Yeah.
So the Court of Appeals, they put them in a spot. So you always want in your lawsuit to ask a question that they do not want to get to the Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
In a municipal trial, we argued that municipal ordinances cannot be applied to the public. That the legislature was authorized to write law, but they were not authorized to delegate that authority.
Yes.
So they did authorize cities and municipal counties, municipal corporations and county corporations to write ordinances. But if the corporation attempted to apply those ordinances to the public in general, that would have the effect of law and would be an unconstitutional application of the law. I filed a petition for writ of mandamus claiming that the Court of Appeals does not have jurisdiction because the trial court did not have jurisdiction because they couldn't apply these laws to the public. The Court of Appeals got that and held it for 9 months and then came back with a ruling that said, well, this municipality had this certain kind of hearing. And they can't have this certain kind of hearing unless they have a meeting and everybody votes to have this certain kind of hearing. I said, what the hell is that crap? What they did was went and found some other reason to dismiss my case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
Yes.
Rather than the one that I filed on, because they did not want to rule on that.
Yep.
And I can't appeal because I got the ruling I asked for. And they told the other side, you better not appeal this. We'll kick your behinds. This is the kind of question you want to ask.
Yeah.
Look for constitutional questions that the Court of Appeals is not going to want to rule on, and never expect to win your case in the trial court.
Yeah.
Your only purpose in the trial court is to set the record for appeal.
Yep.
You don't care what that judge rules. And the more outrageous he rules, the better.
Yep. That's even better. Yeah. I love these. You know, I get a lot of people asking me, you know, that are being run through ragged through these trial courts where they're on citations or minor misdemeanors or whatever. I've even got a friend of mine who is being run ragged through these courts for some bogus charges. One where she's being accused of domestic violence against her partner, where all of the evidence is the other way around. And then, anyway, without going off into too much of the weeds, so I helped her out. I was like, you're going to set the record straight, because when you look at these upper court decisions from the courts of appeals, from the Supreme Courts of not only states but also United States, you can see the jurisprudence is there. And as long as you can articulate the argument, you have to give the trial court and that judge every opportunity to do the right thing. Got to give them that opportunity. So you file your proper motions to dismiss. They deny your motions to dismiss, and they don't issue any conclusions of law or findings of fact. Okay, where's my conclusions of law and findings of fact? Here's another motion for reconsideration. I'm asking you, judge, to do the right thing. They deny that, or they ignore it altogether, which we see all the time, especially as Randy knows, when we go into these courts, we're challenging that court's authority, i.e. jurisdiction. And until jurisdiction is proven on the record, the court has no authority to do anything. But again, they're hedging their bets. Oh, this is just some moron who thinks they know the law. This is one of those sovereign citizens, right? We're being labeled domestic terrorists now because we're standing up for our individual rights. And we're asking, hey, the record does not reflect that the moving party, in this case, the prosecution, they don't have jurisdiction to bring this case to this court. There's no jurisdiction here. There's no subject matter jurisdiction. And until the moving party puts that into the record, the court can do nothing, but they do it anyway. All right, we'll give that judge every opportunity to correct that mistake. File a motion to dismiss, it's denied. File a motion for reconsideration, it's either denied or ignored. File one last chance. Give them three chances. Hey, judge, I'm giving you the last opportunity here, because we have, there are certain things that we can do that lawyers will never do. Hey, Randy, when's the last time you met a lawyer that wrote a petition for a writ of mandamus?
they're afraid to.
Right?
James, remind people what that means.
So a writ of mandamus is just, it's a Latin term where it's a higher court is ordering a lower court to do something. So for an example, you file a petition. So writs, extraordinary writs, are just what they say. They're commands. And they're commands from higher courts, like Supreme Court at state or appellate courts. You have to look at each state. It's different on where you file those with. Here in Utah, where I live, the Court of Appeals takes primary jurisdiction over those writs. But there's any number of different writs you can file. So you probably heard a writ for habeas corpus. You know, if you're being unlawfully held in jail, you have a right to file a petition for a habeas corpus to be released.
Like the Jan 6 defendants, I guess, falls on deaf ears, right, in the District
right.
of Columbia.
Yeah, so there's also a writ of mandamus, as Randy's talked about. But there's also another writ that is very, very seldom talked about. And it's called a writ of prohibition. So the only time that it's inappropriate to seek that writ is if you did everything in the trial court to give the court the opportunity to ensure the court had jurisdiction. Because what a writ of prohibition is it's an order from a higher court telling a lower court to halt all proceedings because that court does not have jurisdiction. So you have to get the record, like Randy's talking about, make the record, show that there was no jurisdiction. And there's, again, we can have a discussion another day of what that looks like. Once you have that record, you can seek that writ of prohibition, saying, I did everything I could to get these guys to do the right thing. They chose to steamroll me anyway. This is my only opportunity to ensure my due process rights are followed.
Well, this is all about, I'm sorry, go ahead. Completely.
No, you're fine. If you do this right, you file the paperwork, you make your record, and you seek that writ. It's very rare that those writs are granted because there's very few that are actually filed. But I'm here to tell you that you have a much better chance of getting that writ granted if you make the record proper from the very beginning.
Well, when we talk about due process too, I just want to say one last thing as we wrap this up. It's all about due process, and there seems to be precious little of it left in what I'm now calling a banana republic. I know Dr. Fred mm-hmm. Graves is much more hopeful about the state of our nation. I think Randy is too. And I think that's the good news here, folks. If you guys want to learn how to do what these two gentlemen do, you can learn how to do that, how to win in court without an attorney. That's Fred Graves' course. I know James learned a lot from that course. Mm-hmm. Randy knows how to do this stuff. And guys, if you're not in the game, if you're not fighting the fight, well, then you're just sitting on the sidelines. I mean, I think that's the bottom line, James, here, mm-hmm. is that you have to engage to save our rights. You have to engage to ensure your due process under the law. You have to take on these tyrants like that mayor who says no more public comments. You have to take them on. Otherwise, these despots will have us enslaved in perpetuity. That's their goal. They don't want people fighting back. They don't want people standing up.
No.
Let me make a quick comment. Taking these guys on, most of the time we're dealing with them where they come after us. And I can tell you from experience, the best fight to have is the one you picked.
Yes.
You go out and go against them. When you're the plaintiff, when you're the petitioner, everything changes.
Oh, yes.
Now everybody's answering to you. And when you get before the court, the only purpose of the trial court is to determine the facts in accordance with the rules of evidence, mm-hmm. then apply the law as it comes to him to the facts in the case. You can give him the most convincing arguments and the most compelling reasons why he should rule in your favor. And he may agree with you. But if you don't give him facts, and law as it applies to those facts
and evidence.
Mm-hmm. And yep. if you're going to take on a case, the first thing you need to do is go get the standard jury charge. What's it called? There's a special term for it. Pattern jury charge.
Yes.
Go get that jury charge. The last thing the judge will say to the jury is, this is what you must find. If you attempt to address or prove anything that's not in that list, you're wasting your time. Mm-hmm. The judge can't hear it. The jury can't hear it. You're wasting everybody's time. Only prove up what's in that pattern jury charge, and that'll keep you on track.
Yep.
Randy, I want to pay it forward here as we wrap this up. I want to show your website, and then, of course, I want to show James's material as well. Rule of Law Radio is the website, guys. Is this right, Randy? 8 to 10 p.m. Central, Monday through Friday, or no, Mondays and Thursdays, 8 p.m. Central to 10 p.m. Central, Fridays at 8 p.m. to midnight Central. Rule of Law Radio, is that the best website, Randy?
Yes.
All right, very good. And James, I think I found your podcast. I like Spotify. I know you can find it on iTunes. I prefer Spotify. Spotify has been pretty good to me over time here. The Justice Revolution. This first one right here, May 26th, income taxes. Am I required to pay them? That is probably 94 minutes people ought not miss, huh?
That's a really good episode because I actually go through what I did myself. Again, like I said, a lot of us just go along to get along. And we Americans in general are good-hearted people, and we don't want to cause problems. We don't want to cause strife. And so if somebody from an authoritative figure tells us we must do something, we just do it often without even asking. And what we're hoping to do now is we need to change the narrative of where we've all grown up through the educational system. We need to start teaching our children, and other people need to start thinking how to think, not thinking what to think. They need to be taught how to think critically. Okay, wait a minute. You're telling me I have to do this? Okay, why? Why do I have to do this? What says that I have to do this? That's what I'm trying to teach my children. You know, as I think most of your listeners know, I have five kids. My nephew lives with us. We got a full house. We got six kids here. I'm trying to teach all of them, including my nephew, of, hey, you need to question everything. If somebody comes to you and says, hey, you need to do this because of this. You need to question that and go, okay, or where is the authority? Is there a law that says I have to do this? Is there a constitutional requirement that says I'm required to do this? I'm here to tell you right now, as citizens of this republic, there is no constitutional requirements that you have to do anything other than respect the rights of others around you. So when you start diving into those things and learning those things, that's where the lights really come on. And that's what that episode there that you saw there with the income taxes, am I required to pay them? So I just started asking questions. And when I looked into things, it's eye-opening. So there's so much in this world that it's impossible for one individual to know everything. Where I'm at is, you know, I come from Steve Emerson side of the house, Alphonse Fagiolo side of the house. I want to get the government out of my life. Leave me the crap alone. And that's with everything. And so I'm learning the things that pertain to my individual sphere, my world. And I'm doing what I can to teach as many people as possible using the little voice that I have. I mean, I don't have a platform like Randy does, but I hope to at some point. I hope to have a platform like you do, Sean. And that's why I'm grateful and appreciative of you inviting me on, so that we can get more and more people out there to get this message out. But I will just say this one thing before we wrap up here is you're seeing a great awakening. You're seeing a change. There, like Randy was talking about his son who's starting to come around, you're seeing people see what's going on with the shadow government, with this puppet in the White House, with whatever you want to call this joker who can't even stand on his two feet. And I mean, it's really sad. I mean, I see what happened, you know, where Biden was at the Air Force Academy graduation and he falls over. I mean, the man's almost 80 years old, or maybe he is 80. My father-in-law is turning 80 this year. I wouldn't want that on my worst enemy. I want my father-in-law to be there for my kids, for his grandkids. And I don't take pleasure in seeing things like that. And it breaks your heart to think that they've thrown this man into this role where he's clearly not in a capacity and able to do that. But that's a discussion for another day. So
yeah, we're the seeing, dog king. He's the dog king, and it's all part of the humiliation ritual.
Yeah, you're seeing more and more people throughout this great republic that, like myself, were just going along to get along, that just voted a particular way, that just wanted to just live their lives. You're seeing more of these people go, wait a minute, why do I have to do this? Wait a minute, just because you have a car that has flashing lights and you wear a badge and you have a gun on your hip and you're telling me I have to do something, why? Why do I have to do that? Now, I'm not suggesting you have that argument with that guy on the side of the road. It's not going to end up well. But there's nothing wrong with questioning that. Ask the questions in the right time. And the place we do that is like Randy says, in the trial court. Ask those questions. Get them to answer questions they don't want to answer. Because right. there's been a system that's been in place and it's been working very well for them. And it's time that system came to a screeching halt.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say, too, as we part ways here is that Fred Graves always says we have a beautiful system. Now use it. And so that is really, I mean, this is a 90-minute sweeping conversation we've just had. And I hope people can take bits and pieces from it that will add value to their lives. But certainly ruleoflawradio.com and the Justice Revolution podcast are two great sources, as is How to Win in Court Without a Lawyer, Fred Graves' course, which people can sign up for and take. I'll try to remember to leave the links to all three of those below, guys. And I want to thank my guests so much for your generous time today. Randy Kelton, first to you, sir. Thank you for coming on.
You are welcome. And James, if you want to come on my show, let me know. I'd be glad to have you.
I'll shoot you an email. I'd love to be on your show, Randy. Love it.
Awesome. And James,
we will
go
have
ahead.
Great fun at your expense.
I'm sure you will.
James, I want to thank you too. Appreciate your generous time today, man. Thanks for coming
on. Thanks for thinking of me. I really appreciate you when you sent me that message and said you're going to have Randy on. I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. So thank you.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for coming on. And I want to thank the audience, too. If you're still with us after, what, 95 minutes, maybe 90 minutes of this conversation, guys, thanks for being here. Thanks for spreading it far and wide within your sphere of influence on social media. And I'll remind you all, for real news every single day, hit us up for free at my three websites, thelibertymill.com, thephaser.com, and, of course, sgtreport.com. Those are all antidotes to the corporate propaganda and all of those mockingbird mainstream media CIA lies. God bless you and yours, friends. Bye-bye. These people want us all on a central bank digital currency.
We don't need more digital currency. We already have digital currency. It's called the US dollar. It's called the euro. It's called the yen. They're all digital right now.